This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Say yes to Pure Leaf tea and free gas for a year only at True North Convenience Stores. When it comes to quality, say yes to the delicious taste of real brewed Pure Leaf tea. True North stores are stocked with your favorite flavors like unsweetened, extra sweet, and raspberry. For a limited time, enter for a chance to win free gas for a year. Check the True Rewards app for details or download the mobile app from the Apple or Google Play stores. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.
Hey, it's Jim Costa with Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I are all over the tournament again this March. Breakdowns of every region and every game, who are the Cinderellas, and which team's cutting down the nets. Subscribe and listen to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks, everybody.
The Bears.
You're listening to the best of the Bears.
He's in for the touchdown, and the Chicago Bears have taken the lead.
A weekly mix of 670 The Score's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
With Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs.
Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune. Longtime contributor to the station and a valued and well-loved friend. And he joins us on the Aturo Tire Hotline. Aturo, your hometown tire, Aturo.com. Big Zay!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, you're very popular, and like you have a texter saying quite literally, I laugh out loud every time you play the Robot Biggs, and you know, compliments on everything you do. Can you ask Biggsy what happened to his Missouri Tigers in the NCAA tournament? People know too much about you.
Yeah, they were bad the last couple of weeks. I watched a couple minutes of the game. That was it. They were so bad to the finish line this season that had no expectations. But to go from winless in the SEC a year ago to making the tournament, that's fine. We'll move on.
We will move on. So Brad, obviously we're reading your draft, and we're going over 1.0. And let's be honest about it. The reality is that's your first bite at the apple, right? How many drafts will you do? You will do one right before the draft in April. I know that.
Yeah, I mean, there'll be a couple more, at least two more, probably, figure on. One guy texts me, he's like, hey, you get, is this based on something you know?
You know stuff, like, Brad? That mean you know stuff?
I'm like blind guess, bro. Blind guess.
But Brad, I think it's interesting though, because you have Will Campbell going to the Bears at 10. And I'm curious, like, based on the people you talk to around the league, is there a building consensus that the first tackle off the board will be Armon Membu from Missouri because of the way he tested and just because of how he has begun to rise?
I think there's a couple factors that go in there. Like Membu, I don't think you can play him at left tackle.
Right.
And I don't think you'd probably want to try. Like, I remember talking to people about him back in, late September, early October. They liked him. They wanted to look at him some more. They thought he might be a guard. Now, I think people feel pretty good about him playing right tackle. But so I think it depends a little bit what you need. Like if you need two tackles, yeah, you could take him and plug him in there. But he's popular right now, and you know, as one GM told me at the combine, he said that offensive linemen in the draft in round one aren't much different than quarterbacks from the standpoint that they get overdrafted because everybody needs them. Like of the 32 teams right now, how many are sitting there and they're saying, oh, yeah, we're good on the O-line? Like, that's a small handful of teams going into the draft every year, whether they actively try to get one in the first couple rounds. You know, that's not always the case, but everybody is always hunting offensive linemen.
Yeah, there's truth in that, and the Bears could, you know, obviously you want them to keep going. I wonder, is it fair to ask if Will Campbell can play left tackle in the NFL?
I mean, that's a good question, and it's a fair question, and people have you know, said, well, what about the arm length? And
right.
Fair question, right? But, boy, you watch him do it at LSU, and it sure looks like he can do it, right? We're not, you're not projecting a guy from a small conference that played, had a big game against Mississippi State, and then they played, Rutgers, and those were the two big teams on the schedule that they played. This is a guy who played at an elite level for a while. He's not a one-year starter. So I think if you're drafting him, chances are you're starting him at left tackle and you see what it looks like anyway, right?
Right. You would have to do that if you take him at 10.
And it's like in a lot of these people that talk about, well, you know, his arm length is an issue, are ignoring the fact that there's been some pretty damn good linemen with shorter arms than you would like that have played left tackle in the last, 20 or 30 years in the NFL.
I tend to agree with that, Brad. I think it's an interesting choice, and if he fell to them, they'd be lucky probably to draft him. I also wonder this. In your mock draft, you have Ashton Jeanty going 12 to the Cowboys. How difficult, if that is indeed the case, would it be in your mind, based on who you've talked to, for Ben Johnson to pass on a running back that would give him a dynamic weapon in the backfield?
Yeah, I'm not going to pretend to know how Ben Johnson feels about Jeanty or his desire to build up that position, but that's got to come down to a number of factors. One, how special is this guy? Like, there's a little bit of recency bias here because, folks are, this is the greatest running back that's come along in a long, long time. He's a really good player. There's no question about that. I would think the loud and proud crowd that wanted them to focus on the offensive line in the off season would probably want them to stick with that in the draft, right? Yeah. Or do we have some flip meet flop where they're going to change their tune, and then if the line isn't fixed for the long haul, they're going to be back again saying these people were idiots that everybody knew they needed to fix the line, because Drew Dolman looks like a guy who can take care of your center position for this season and hopefully quite a while to come. Tooney, that's a shorter term fix.
Yes.
And Jonah Jackson, they've got a lot of faith in, and if you're believing in the coach, you're trusting him there. But he needs to bounce back, and you've got the question mark at left tackle. So you can't go wrong continuing to build the line. The Lions didn't get their fancy toy at the running back position until they had really built up the structure and the backbone of that roster.
That's a good way of putting it. And I as I have said many times, I have no problem drafting line of scrimmage at number 10, at 39, at 41. And maybe not all offensive linemen, but there are two sides to the line of scrimmage. I know they've improved through free agency, but I don't believe they're done there either.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, is that gets lost in this discussion about Jeanty at 10 that I think you know, some people just kind of ignore. It's a fantastic draft for running backs. It's not a good draft for running backs. It's a great draft. So that being said, like, are you at the point in your program where you can take a running back 10th overall, where you can draft a running back in the first round for the first time since Cedric Benson, which was two decades ago? Are they at that point in their program? I don't know that a foray in a free agency, understanding that they've got some players with really strong track records, high marks on the field, in the locker room, but we tend to get kind of blinded by some of these moves in free agency where we expect them in March and April to be more impactful than they wind up being in October and in November. So are they at that point where they can pull the trigger on a running back that high in the draft?
Brad, I love the top 10, but very curious. But same question kind of applies to Tyler Warren, who you have going 7 to the Jets. That's very high for a tight end unless you're convinced that he's one of these guys that makes your offense instantly dangerous.
Yeah, I think Tyler Warren's interesting because he can impact every down. Right, like he's fantastic in the passing game. He's going to do everything he's called upon and more in the running game. I mean, he's a guy you can't dismiss from any conversation about the Bears at number 10, right? Because he's that total package at the tight end position, which I think is kind of, you know, what the Bears like. I think they'll get away from, you know, going for this one-dimensional guy, a Jimmy Graham type, a Gerald Everett, guys of that type. I think they're looking for players that can do it all. And, you know, I don't know what the chances are would be for him, but you'd need to have a conversation about him at 10. I think he's a really good player. Hmm.
You know, I mean, and I don't think it's for 10, but whoever winds up with Omarion Hampton, it's like you're drafting Derrick Henry. I mean, you see the size of this guy and the athletic ability and the strength. I mean, he's like a man.
Wow.
Yeah, he probably goes round one.
Yes.
That's your second. That's your second running back that's taken, and you know. Maybe the Bears are looking at him in a scenario and where there's a trade down.
Right.
I think they probably need to resist the urge to trade up with these three. You're in a really good spot right here.
You don't want to trade up, right?
Picks. Yeah. Well, you got three picks in the top 41.
Yes.
Just you know, be confident in the process you've put in place to stack your draft board, right, and arrange it, and then attack it, right, and then go get it, and keep your draft capital where it's at.
Brad, I just wonder if you're attaching any significance to the fact that Ben Johnson shows up at a Hawks game and they score a touchdown and win 7-4.
He did. He had
instant offense.
The Hawks are totally irrelevant, brother. That's
nice.
Completely irrelevant.
They won yesterday, Brad. Bedard's hot.
Win, lose, or draw, they are irrelevant.
Ben Johnson begs to differ, and he was there. All right, good stuff, Biggsy.
Yeah.
Love the mock draft.
Good talking to you, buddy. The mock draft is tons of fun. I wonder if more quarterbacks will be taken than you imagine. You know, there's a lot of talk about Jackson Dart moving up. You know, no one would have picked Denver jump in and take their quarterback, and it happened. And I think there could be a run on the bank, as we always know. Everybody needs a quarterback.
The Steelers need to get involved somehow because they're still trying to move on from Ben Roethlisberger, and maybe Aaron Rodgers lands there. But even if Rodgers does, you've got to
there is next year.
Come up with a solution for that position.
There's always a year after you get a 40-year-old quarterback. Great stuff, Big Z.
See you, Brad.
If Rodgers goes to the Steelers, the Bears do have Pittsburgh on the schedule this season.
Yeah, they come to town, I believe.
And have a great day, guys.
All right, you too.
He owns them.
Well, he may not own them
anymore.
I don't know. Not with that group. Maybe. He'll make the Steelers better if he goes there.
He would.
He would make the Steelers
they need a
definitely feel like they have a chance to return to the playoffs.
The Score Midday Show, 10 to 2 on 670 The Score.
He will not allow bad habits to continue on. So it will be called out. It will be dealt with before we move on to the next thing. Yeah. I have a lot of confidence in that.
As we broadcast live from the Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by your local Hyundai dealers, it is the Midday Show in for the afternoon show. Spiegel and Holmes on their way to Las Vegas to go to Circa, so Marshall and I are here. That was Ryan
change
Poles.
Change places!
We did. And that was Ryan Poles, who did not change places. He's still doing his thing as he talks about Caleb Williams. And we're all trying to figure out together what this means, the addition of Ben Johnson, the addition of offensive line improvements, what they're going to do at the number 10 pick in the draft. All of it is centered around Caleb Williams and what this means for him and his development, Marshall.
Here's what it means. It means not only is it Caleb over everything, which has been the whole point since the beginning of last season after they drafted him, but also now that you've got all these levers in place, all these different things that were brought in to make sure that he becomes the best quarterback that he can be, it's now all on Caleb Williams. And I don't say that to put all the pressure on him. I'm just saying, from a broad standpoint, if you're an organization, what we know about NFL quarterbacks and NFL franchise quarterbacks and their importance, and we talk about how quickly you can develop them and get them playing at a high level, that can alter a franchise. And it can also lengthen your window from the beginning to the end. Everybody's got a runway, right? But the quicker you can get your quarterback off the runway and into the air and at cruising altitude, the better off you're going to be as an organization. Now with what they've done, going out to get Ben Johnson, going out and getting all these parts on the offensive line, these specific veteran players, now it's up to Caleb Williams to do his part in his own development. And that's to follow whatever roadmap is set out there, whatever path Ben Johnson sets out for him as a QB.
Oh, that's absolutely fair. And I feel like while we're trying to figure this out, and we will be 4 months, and even when the NFL season starts, we'll still be trying to see how this takes shape, because you know, and I know, development like that doesn't just come in week one. It doesn't just come after the training camp process is over. It doesn't just come after September. But we get some answers, and we also take a look back at what was said about Caleb Williams at this time last year. Sean King does not care if you say something and retort to what he has to say about football. The man has a viewpoint. He's a former quarterback. He's used to criticism. We know that. Like, Sean King, I don't know that he necessarily wants your smoke, but he knows it's going to be there, right? I say that's a fair assessment.
I think for him, he's like, hey, I did the job. I know what it is. I've also coached quarterbacks. I look at a lot of tape. I enjoy looking at tape. I love noticing the little small details between what makes a play work and what makes a play not work. What makes a quarterback good at one area and what makes him needing improvement in another. That's what I love about Sean King, is he's giving it to you straight up. No chaser.
I also think it's good to have varying viewpoints, because that's what you want. If somebody sees a weakness or they see something that concerns them, then it's okay to point that out and say, this is what I like about this individual. This is what concerns me about this one that maybe hasn't been said. So let's listen to Sean King talking to Spiegel and Holmes yesterday, now that he's had a year of tape on Caleb Williams.
I don't think he has bad fundamentals from a footwork standpoint. He throws the ball with a good base. The release point is pretty consistent. I think he struggles at times to see in-breaking routes that are in between the hashes. So a lot of times you don't see him throwing the ball with anticipation from that 12 to 20-yard in-breaking area in the middle of the field. That can be improved. The problem is mentally he's so used to creating explosive plays by extending the play that it gets him into trouble. So when you put him behind what last year was a below-average offensive line, and then his predisposition with trying to create explosive plays, then you get a lot of negative yardage plays. So the first thing I'm going to do, if I'm coaching him, and I think the old Ohio State coach is the quarterback. I mean, Ohio State quarterback is the quarterback coach here, right? JT Barrett?
Yes.
Is that who it is? So the first thing I'm going to do if I'm JT is I'm going to tell Caleb, listen, you never go broke taking a profit. We're going to surround you with great personnel. I'm going to pull up Jared Goff film and show Caleb how many yards were produced by just throwing the ball on time to Jahmyr Gibbs, and I'm drawing a blank on the other running back, the one that was in Chicago.
Montgomery.
Detroit. Montgomery. All right, that's the first cut up that I'm going to show Caleb. Jared throwing the ball to the check down on time in rhythm and all the production that came from that, because that's where the remake of Caleb has to begin.
I could listen to Sean King talk all day. Because it's just so, I love his perspective and how different it is.
Or we could just let that clip play on repeat all day.
For Caleb Williams.
It really is that simple. Listen to Ben Johnson. Do what he tells you to do. He'll let you know when it's okay for you to freelance. Now is not the time to freelance. Now is the time to use your athleticism and your ability to read and do the simplest thing that you're being asked to do. Don't make it harder than what it is, because it is going to be hard at some point. But when we talk about building Caleb Williams back up, Sean King is absolutely, I'm on board with everything he's saying. Not like I know better than Sean King, but I'm saying what he's saying is so simplistic and it makes so much sense.
Right.
Just hit the guy you're supposed to hit on time.
You don't always have to go for the home run. And to Lawrence's credit, his source before the draft said that that was something that Williams does. He tries to hit the home run ball or go for the home run play. College, the problem is, I think of so many quarterbacks who are so good at either extending a play or fixing the busted play. But that's just not going to be the case in the NFL. You're not going to have that kind of breakdown. The defense facing you is so much better that you won't have those opportunities.
They're so much faster. They're so much smarter. They're so much more experienced. The defensive line, the linebackers, the blitzing corner or safety. You have to have your head very much programmed to go to the line and understand what is coming. And that's the biggest part of the battle. Then it's the execution. So Ben Johnson's biggest thing right now is explaining or helping to explain what he's facing when he steps to the line of scrimmage in terms of the possibilities, what's coming at him. Once you understand the possibilities, then you can make a decision. Once the ball is snapped, then you execute your decision. And then if something unforeseen happens between the time the ball is snapped and you can make a play, then you freelance.
It's just, I think when you're faced with chaos and you're faced with the breakdowns that he was, you're going to default to what you know. And so I understand that we saw a lot of that happen last season, especially as a rookie. But in the NFL, your home runs come, for example, when you notice a massive mismatch where you've got a linebacker or somehow even worse, a defensive lineman in pass coverage, and that's pre-snap, and you see what's going to take place if you make the right throw once the ball is snapped. You've already hit that home run before the play even begins. You know, that's where the home run ball a lot of the time comes in the NFL game. And unfortunately, that's something that takes years to develop sometimes.
Well, we're hoping it doesn't take years to develop, because Ben Johnson, I was told, could expedite this process. And that's the goal. Now maybe it will take longer than I wanted to take. I mean, you could argue it's already taken longer than any of us wanted to take because we're in year two coming off a season in which the Bears lost a lot more games than they won.
And credit to Twitch for remembering that, yeah, Sean King did have Jaden Daniels ahead of Caleb Williams.
Oh, he did. Yeah, he took a victory lap with them when he started that segment with Spiegel and Holmes today.
And fair enough, he should have. He should have been able to take that victory lap given what Jaden Daniels has done. Now, does that take anything away from Caleb Williams? No. Both can be very successful.
And I don't think that Jaden Daniels is at this level where Caleb Williams can't catch up to him. It's been 1 year. It's been 1 year.
It has been. But and to Jaden Daniels' credit, he hit quite a few home runs on the deep ball last year. He made things happen.
His line held up also, and his play caller was pretty decent at calling plays.
His play caller had his best season of coaching.
Ooh, is that a hot take?
No. Given the end of Cliff Kingsbury's seasons, no, I don't think so.
Oh, because the way, even if he has a winning record, the way they usually end when he was in Arizona.
No, I mean, they were close to making the Super Bowl. No, I don't think that's a hot take. He also had a playoff experience tight end who they just extended. That helps, too.
I like everything about where Caleb Williams is right now, and it's easy for me to say that because he hasn't taken a snap past year one in the NFL. But he was able to stay healthy. He played 17 games, and I'm very, very, very much intrigued to see what Ben Johnson does with him going forward.
Stumble bum play that you hit the Bears with.
Did you like that one?
You like that?
It was clever.
You like that?
Right now, Jason Leisure, Dan Wiederer, they're just sharpening knives.
Jason Leisure.
I will fight Chris Emma in Starbucks. I will fight him in a Panera, a Dunkin' Donuts, a Quiznos, a White Hen, a Schlotsky's. Name the time, name the place. I'll be there, Chris Emma.
Sounds good.
Bears reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times.
That's Potsy's way. Like, if you ask him anything. I remember I once asked him if he was more of a... Because I saw that he had some kind of animal hair or fur on his jacket or something, or his hoodie. And I remember asking him if he had dogs or cats. And Potsy goes, that's too personal. He is so engaging and friendly and lovable to everybody in that media room, except for me and Patrick Finley. Maybe that's why he took the buyout.
Jason Leisure with Spiegel and Holmes on 670 The Score.
Jason Leisure covers the Bears for the Sun-Times. He does a great job doing it. It's been an interesting week. We like talking to him about everything that is NFL and the Bears, and he joins us now on the Circa Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circa app today. Hey, Mr. Leisure, how are you?
What's going on, Loho? We got Matt with us, too?
Yeah, there he is.
I'm right here. Thank you. Thank you for asking and noticing. God love you, Mr. Leisure. We're all here. How are you, buddy?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
We're doing really well, I think, and we're going to be off to Vegas tomorrow after we do the midday show. They were nice.
Why do I never get to go? You guys do this all the time, and there's never been any kind of, hey, do you want to come with?
I didn't feel like Vegas is your type of town, but I
love Vegas.
Really?
Yeah, and I don't really gamble or party or any of those fun things, but the weather's always good. The hotels are awesome, and the restaurants are awesome.
Wait a minute. Wasn't your last trip to Las Vegas you staying at the Tropicana as it was, like, ready to be bulldozed the next day or something like that?
It was the very end. It was the final days of the Tropicana. And when I say the hotels are awesome, I don't mean the Tropicana. Although that is the one that I have most frequently stayed at because it's a Hilton property, and I have Hilton rewards or whatever, but... yeah, Matt, I was staying at the Tropicana, kind of on the south end of the strip, across from the castle one. What's the castle one?
Excalibur.
Excalibur.
Excalibur, yeah. The medieval Excalibur one. And
Excalibur.
They were demolishing it
Excalibur.
after that week. And you could tell. Everybody had pretty much checked out. It rained. This was Super Bowl week last year. It was pouring rain all week. I've never seen that in Vegas, and it was dripping through the ceiling, and nobody even, like, put a bucket out in the hallway for it. It was It was apocalyptic.
Yeah, but there's something uniquely American about a decay when it's surrounded by all of the Vegas absurdity. Like, there's just, it really is. It really speaks to our decline as an empire while bigger and shinier things are going up right next door.
Have you ever seen those eerie photos of defunct Olympic venues?
Oh, yeah. Like in Salt Lake City and...
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It was like living inside one of those for 10 days.
Oh, yeah, man. Those. And have you ever seen the photos of like old theme parks that have been overgrown? That's... Woo, talk about uniquely American. But you know what else is uniquely American? Wait for it, everybody. The Chicago Bears are uniquely American. Thank you very much. Drive safely, everyone.
Does America want that to be American? I mean, is America happy when that's on their TV on Monday night or Thursday night or Sunday night?
They will be this year. They will be happy this year, my friend. It's coming. It's coming. And we spent a lot of time talking about the defensive line last hour and like Dio Odengbo as a stout defensive end who can... you know, swallow up some pressure in terms of holding his ground and let some Dennis Allen creativity going around him to bring pass rush. If he's not bringing the pass rush himself, he can still be a part of it with some defensive creativity. What's the perfect kind of D lineman to add to this mix? Should the Bears be going that way with their first pick in the draft? What's the perfect kind of D lineman to add in?
Well, I would go left tackle with the first pick, with the number 10 overall pick, and then I would look for defensive line help in the second round. But if you want to go, you know, defensive tackle early, that's not crazy. That wouldn't be my priority. The Bears have all these top priorities. You can't have multiple top priority. You can't be all of these things are our top priority. You got to pick one. And I would say that left tackle is the one that they should most quickly and successfully address. But if you want a defensive tackle, you need one that's going to get pass rush pressure. They've gotten, if you've watched their defensive line, which has been the worst in the NFL over the last 3 years, has had the fewest sacks in the NFL, they're not getting pressure from really anywhere but Montez Sweat. You have to be forcing pressure from every part of that offensive line. You have to have somebody opposite Montez Sweat, and you have to be making some headway in the middle.
You wrote about offseason spending in the Sun-Times and all of the things that it's done and how it has to – you have to make sure that all of that works to elevate Caleb Williams. When you really went back and dissected it, how did you feel – about what they've done and whether it will put Caleb in a better position to learn and win?
I think with every team you're looking, when they bring in a bunch of talent in the offseason or spend a lot of money in the offseason, you are looking at a best case scenario, which is usually what the team imagines, and then a worst case scenario, which is incredibly pessimistic, and it's probably not going to be either one. It's probably going to fall somewhere in the middle. It's not likely that all five of these guys that they brought in on big contracts are all going to stay healthy and perform up to those contracts. But if it's mostly right, and especially as it pertains to Caleb Williams, if it's right with the three offensive linemen, if Jonah Jackson is really the player that he used to be in Detroit and not the player who was injured last year trying to play center for the Rams, and if Joe Tooney still has everything in the tank and is still just as good as he's been the last few years, even though he's 32, I think, when the season starts, then that's huge for Caleb Williams. It totally changes the equation for him. But everything affects Caleb Williams. And if you have a bunch of the, indirectly or directly, if you have a bunch of these signings or acquisitions, even if they're on defense, that don't play up to the contract, then that hurts you in other ways, and it'll hurt you on game days in the sense of you don't want Caleb Williams playing from behind all the time, which is what he ended up doing a lot last year, and you're in obvious passing situations all the time, which is probably the hardest thing in the NFL, is to complete passes consistently in obvious passing situations. And you also are kind of you're wasting salary cap dollars that are really, really important.
You know, he did a great job in the fourth quarter last year, and a lot of those times in obvious passing situations. So that gives me some hope in that regard. But it's going to be a fascinating dynamic, Jason. I think we're going to end up focusing, it's odd to say, but a lot more on Caleb's learning curve as it relates to winning this year, because I think they're going to like really try and do what they should have done last year, which is to trust him to make big plays when he can, but really just kind of let the offense do its thing in terms of running the ball and let the scheme do its thing. There's going to be a lot of pressure on Caleb to make really good choices within structure. And we haven't seen him be forced to do that often because of how chaotic things often were last year. It's going to be really interesting to focus on him in structure this year.
And it's going to be interesting to see how much of a process it is to adapt to this offense for him, because throwing a new offense at a rookie quarterback, or now it'll be his second year, you wonder how much really was gained from that first year. You hope that there was something gained, because you certainly didn't get a lot from the coaching. You hope that there was something gained from the game experience, from seeing Brian Flores' defense twice, even if it didn't go well. One of the games it did, one of the games it didn't. You hope that all the looks, all the ways that veteran defensive players try to trick you by showing one thing and then cutting off a passing route, a passing lane at the last second after you're already releasing the ball. You hope that there's some game knowledge that is built up, but they could end up retooling quite a bit with him in terms of the way he views the game, the throws that are predominantly part of this offense, and footwork and timing and things like that. Obviously, the terminology is going to be all new.
Yeah.
It will be interesting to see how quickly he adapts to that, because while that is good for him in the long run, do you want this guy coached by Ben Johnson as opposed to Shane Waldron? But it's a process when you're first learning that offense.
No, absolutely. And this is kind of just as much as going into last year. The thought is that this is a competitive window right now. Like, let's go ahead, kid. So we'll be watching. I wonder if year one in a brand new offense with all this stuff is going to be akin learning curve to the rookie year last year. You know, I wonder if it's going to be similar.
It can't be quite that. I mean, there's so many things you learn. I think it's really going to be similar to that, but with a head start from the game experience. Because one of the things you have to learn as a college quarterback going into the pros is how much quicker defensive backs will close on what looks like an open player. And like the target is smaller, and you have to recognize it quicker. And you learn that some of these throws that you got away with in college are not going to fly here, even against the bad teams. There's just not ever going to be that kind of disparity in talent like there is when you're playing at USC and you're playing Western Colorado State or somebody like that. So hopefully he's banked some of that. And one of the things I like about Caleb Williams, and that makes me like his chances of adapting to this quickly and adapting well, is he's super smart. He's so intelligent, and he's so serious and so hungry to get better that there's no question to me he's going to put in the time and the effort to try to get it. I would have said pretty similar things about Justin Fields and Mitch Trubisky. Those guys did not struggle because they were screw-ups. They were hard workers and guys that tried to put in the time and the effort to get it, and it just didn't click. So it has to be more than that. You have to be that talented, and you have to be that fast at processing a defense in 2.5 seconds or whatever it ends up being. But I like that Caleb Williams goes into it with some humility and realizing very objectively about his own game that there is a lot of room to grow here.
You've covered the league for a long time. I'd love to know how you view what's happening with both Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins.
I think they're both not as good as they think they are. And I think they're both, especially Rodgers, Rodgers is an aging quarterback, and you really probably should be done in most cases by now. And certainly, if not done, clearly in decline. And you look a lot of times at some of the exceptions, like Tom Brady playing well to 45 or something like that, or even some guys like Drew Brees, Peyton Manning, were breaking down physically late in their career, but they either had the right talent around them, or they were able to, they were so smart that they could compensate for that for a little while. But it's pretty normal to decline at that age. And Aaron Rodgers is obviously, to me, in decline. If you look at the last few years, between health and his play when he's been healthy for the last three seasons, this is the end.
You know, it's a good point about those other guys who aged gracefully and succeeded. You know what else they had? Really good partners schematically and coaching-wise. Like, you know, Brady getting to work with Bruce Arians, and, you know, and Brees getting to go as long as he did with Peyton. You know, Aaron thought, I guess he thought he was going to have that with Nathaniel Hackett, but that went boom. So now trying to do it again, like on a one-year deal in Pittsburgh or anywhere, like you got to be personally compatible and a really good teammate. And Lord knows we know he's not that.
And with those two guys, Spiegs, the same injury. And I know that people, the science has come a long way, and you can get back. But when you're either over 40 or closing in on 40, that particular injury is really difficult to be yourself. And so it always struck me. And Rodgers' numbers are not terrible. That doesn't mean that he played well, but his numbers suggest that he could still be a viable quarterback. But I think that Jason's on it. I think in both cases, you have two guys that have so much invested in themselves that it sometimes makes it difficult for them to see the big picture.
I love that Kirk Cousins is going to be on the second edition of Quarterback, the Netflix documentary, since he had such a star turn in the first. So maybe staying alive, Jason, for one more year on somebody's bench or wherever lets him have another media star turn in the documentary.
Well, it's already filmed, though. So it's going to be like we're going to get to see him get benched for Michael Penix. So it should be very interesting to watch.
It'll be really interesting if they were in the room with him when they drafted Michael Penix. And actually, I'd turn that around and ask you guys what you think about that. Atlanta pays him all this money, pays him clearly long-term starting quarterback money, 4 years, $160 million. Uh-huh. Then turns around the next month and drafts somebody in the top 10. Shock to Kirk Cousins. Nobody clued him in on that until the last second. And now they won't let him go because he's a pretty decent backup plan. And you're not really paying anything for Michael Penix. So $40 million plus not very much for two quarterbacks. Do you think Atlanta has really done him wrong here, or do you think that's just good business by Atlanta?
I thought it was a really weird move at the time, and I still think that them signing him to big money was terrible. The word on the street is that Kirk doesn't want the Mike Glennon moment, and so he's okay with being traded, but he wants to wait until the draft is done before he moves out here and is like, yeah, you can go ahead and trade me. He wants to kind of pick where there isn't a quarterback necessarily lurking to take the job away from him.
You know the big winner, guys, and all that bad money that's sitting there on Kirk Cousins' contract.
Ryan Pace.
No?
No.
I'm going to say Ryan Poles, because they couldn't afford to sign Drew Dahlman. And they had to cut Grady Jarrett.
Yep.
So the Bears swoop in and get a veteran, proven beast in the middle of both the offensive line and the defensive line because of all that wasted money on Kirk Cousins. So thank you, Atlanta.
I felt like you were thanking Ryan Pace at the draft, too, that they snatched up another quarterback. That no one was expecting another quarterback to go before the Bears pick. And
you're right.
Roma Dunze to sit there for them.
You're absolutely right. So Ryan Pace continues to do solids.
I would say on the topic of Aaron Rodgers, too, you know, I don't get the impression that he's easy to work with. And
I think that is spot on. And I think
there's a sliding scale.
Oh, yeah.
There's a sliding scale of how much of that you will tolerate, and it correlates
to how great you are,
how well you can still play. And 5 years ago, I think I would sign up to put up with all the Aaron Rodgers related headaches to win. I think now you're signing up for the headaches, and I don't know if he's still got it.
Jason, as always, we appreciate your time. Love that cap. Talk to you soon.
See you guys.
See you, man. Yeah, that sliding scale of your bag alert, your bag factor, your personal bag factor, as it correlates to your excellence, is one that we have seen play out in a lot of different ways in our sports and media space.
We need to take a break. When we come back, let's talk some baseball. The Cubs are actually playing right now. Ben Brown had a nice outing against Atlanta. 4 1/3 was really sharp out there on the mound. There's a couple of different roster moves that were made today that might interest Cubs fans.
Yes, sir.
For
yes,
a lot
sir.
Of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
We'll talk about all of that next here on The Score.
The Score!
And now after the fumble by Herbert, 30-yard line. Boise is going to set up shop. Give to Jenty. Ashton Jenty breaks free. Jenty!
The debate continues. Should the Bulls, as we hurtle toward the NFL draft, draft Ashton Jenty 10th overall?
You meant the Bears. I know.
Did I say Bulls?
You said the Bulls. But look, after last night, I understand why the Bulls are on your mind, front and
what
center.
What if Ashton Jenty went to the Bulls? How would that look?
I don't think he's big enough to
presence cross. In the lane.
He's kind of small.
Like, you know what I say about these things?
Tell me.
Six fouls to give.
Have you ever seen that video where they just, it's slides of NFL players next to NBA players because you think NFL players are so big, but then they're standing next to, like, Steph Curry is bigger than most of the NFL.
It is wild. Yeah, it's crazy to think that 6'4 is big in the NFL.
Right, but it's very regular in the NBA.
6'4 is a point guard. Like,
yeah.
Yeah, it's... If you're lucky, that's Damian Lillard.
Yeah. I feel like he's 6'3", but he might be 6'4".
Well, I think he's listed at 6'4". The okay. point being, Ashton Jenty would have six fouls to give in the NBA.
Is that what he brings to the table?
I got six fouls, coach. He's more than that, but you know what I'm trying to say. As we continue to go toward the NFL draft, and we're gonna do this for the next month until it actually happens. We're inside the month mark now, but... The debate continues as to whether or not the Bears should try to go for the running back. They are, at least as of a week and a half ago, they had the highest odds, even though expectation was still the Dallas Cowboys drafting Ashton Jenty. Brad Biggs in his mock draft last week that he released, the 1.0, had Will Campbell falling to the Bears, the tackle from LSU. And I still think that Campbell would be falling if that were the case, but... People are skeptical about his arm length, and I understand that that is something that they care about. Ryan Poles has shown that he likely cares about it as well in what you see out of the arm length of, say, Braxton Jones, who's in the upper percentile. When it comes to figuring out what you're going to do now that the Bears have help on the line, which they've had, they created, we've talked about it a lot on this show, the debate over Ashton Jenty rages. And I think what you're seeing here, Marshall, is the classic best player available versus team need versus did you buy yourself enough to have a luxury pick? I still consider Jenty a luxury. If you're one player away, like the Eagles with a Saquon Barkley, then it's probably a discussion. But you're not picking that high typically if you're one player away.
No. So you're not. You're
we're still
not.
Seeing this point counterpoint floating around the league.
I like it though. I like the engagement it creates. I like the attention that's brought to the issue of the running back. Do you know how many running backs were drafted in the first round last year?
I do not off the top of my head.
Well, that's because there were none. So it's hard to remember one when there were none. The year before that, there were years
where there weren't in the top two.
Well, I'm saying the year before that, 2023, you know how many running backs were drafted in the first round? Two.
Bijan Robinson and...
Ben Johnson. Jahmyr Gibbs. The year before that, 2022, do you know how many running backs were drafted in the first round? Zero. So that's the trend has been of late. Why would you spend a first round pick on a running back? Now, if you look at the two teams that did take running backs, Jahmyr Gibbs obviously on a very good team last year and a good team that since he's been in the NFL, you could argue Bijan Robinson hasn't had the quarterback play necessary for his team to be good enough. Although, don't they play in the worst division in football if you had to really align things? Is the NFC South worse than the AFC South?
Oh.
Because those are the two divisions I look at.
Yeah, when you put it that way. I still think the NFC South was weaker overall.
Okay. But so your point about luxury, it's interesting. And it's been the topic of a lot of smart football people talking about football. Dane Brugler was actually with Robert Mays on the Athletic Football Show and was asked about the idea of the Bears taking Ashton Jeanty at number 10.
Should we have the Ashton Jeanty conversation too? I mean, because when
so
you
this
do,
is
I
th- this is the other one to throw in there. Yeah. Is that now?
When you look at the depth chart, it's the one area that's like kind of like they could use an upgrade there. I think is running back.
I understand that thought if you look at the depth chart right now, but I'm still on board with you. I still think if you projected a year from now and Braxton Jones is a free agent and you're always, you always need more defensive linemen. You always need more pass rushers. So 100%. Them getting a third pass rusher at 10, having that guy be a rotational piece this year, you know, by year three, if you move on from Dio and that guy becomes a star, you know, I think having that guy in the pipeline is worth it. And then offensive line, if you do have to move on from Braxton next year or you choose to, do you have a tackle in the pipeline that you can just throw in there? I still think when you're picking 10th overall and you're not lined up for multiple years at high impact positions, especially up front, I would rather take another swing at those high impact positions up front. I still think running backs are luxury picks, especially in the top 10. I don't think this roster is in the sort of position where they can afford luxury picks because, like I said, they need more blue chip talent. And I think that is what at 10, that's where you have to be hunting for that blue chip talent.
Let me ask you this. If you could get Bijan Robinson for the 10th overall pick, are you making that trade?
No.
Interesting.
I feel like you can find a running back a little bit later. I do. Mm-hmm. And this is something, you know, it's a longer conversation, but people mm-hmm. are going to point to what happened with Saquon and what happened with Derrick Henry and all that stuff. Derrick Henry is making less than the guy drafted 10th overall is going to end up making. And I think the idea that we're automatically going to be paying this guy like top 10 money at the position. And we've never even seen him play. So do we think Ashton Jeanty is going to be really good? Yeah, I can understand thinking Ashton Jeanty is going to be really good. We thought Melvin Gordon was going to be really good too. Melvin Gordon was solid. He was a good NFL running back. He was capable. He was productive. But I don't think anybody ever looked at him and said, yeah, that's a guy that was worth the 10th overall pick. So I just feel like that it's enough of a crapshoot when you've never seen the guy play in the NFL where that logic of, well, if we drop Saquon into this, like, how's it going to go? Ashton Jeanty is probably not Saquon, and we have no idea if he is or not.
But and that's why I said Bijan, because I – it's not just that we haven't seen him. It's also the fact that the running back position is what it is. And especially in a draft like this, where it's running back rich, you can get a plan B, plan C later on and feel just as, not just as comfortable, but almost as comfortable with the running back you're getting later. It's just, do you believe that a guy like Ashton Jeanty could be that needle mover, you know, just a little bit different where he is in whether or not you think Bijan's in that type or not, but a Saquon type, but a guy that is a true needle mover. There's not many running backs like that, you know, and so could the Bears see him that way? I think it's possible, sure. Yeah. But I, again, in this draft especially, where it is just flush with running backs. I mean, there will be running backs that go undrafted that will have NFL careers in this draft.
Okay.
I think he's right about that. This is an incredibly strong class of running backs, and that seems to be the case from every draft analyst who evaluates classes as a whole.
And that was, you know, Dane Brugler with Robert Mays, the Athletic Football Show. They know what they're talking about. I go with this. Would they feel the same way if the running back class wasn't as deep as it is? That's number one. But number two, I completely agree with the point. Use draft resources to get a running back. You just don't have to use the number 10 pick. You've got a couple of other picks early second round. One of those you could use on a running back, or you could wait even later depending on how the draft plays out. I think there are other areas, and I thought the Melvin Gordon topic was a good one, the way they kind of projected that out, right? How about this? Based on what you know about money and the eye-opening, because now that I think about it, that does make sense that Derrick Henry's not getting that type of money, even now as a future Hall of Famer.
Which is wild.
It's wild.
It just tells you the value. It tells you how they interpret the value of that position.
But over the last 10 years, I'm going to give you the names of every first round draft pick. And you tell me if you feel like they're worth, based on what you've seen them do in the last 10 years, a first round draft pick. In 2015, the aforementioned Melvin Gordon was taken 15th. Todd Gurley was 10th. Either of those guys?
Gurley had a flash, didn't he?
But you can't at 10. You can't afford a flash. That's my point.
I mean, Gurley probably had what, two very notable seasons.
I can get a running back coming off a rookie contract for a flash.
Yeah,
and not have to pay him top first round money. All right, 2016.
DeAndre Swift is making pretty decent money.
Number 4 overall, Ezekiel Elliott. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to trigger you.
I mean, I was there. It was here. You know, it was. But he's the excellent example of this. 4 overall. Now, the Cowboys' entire offense was based around him, but look what's happened in the latter years of his deal with that team, and then look what happened when he came back.
Are you ready for 2017? Number 4 overall, Leonard Fournette.
Oh, man.
But.
Studs just fist pumped.
4 picks later. At 8, Christian McCaffrey. That's a guy who you're fine with him being the 8th overall pick.
Better value. You saw how he was utilized.
2018, number 2 overall, Saquon Barkley, the aforementioned. Number 27, Rashad Penny. That is late first round. And then number 31, Sony Michel. Saquon, yes. The other two, absolutely not. When you get a first rounder, you need someone who is going to give you... You're thinking someone who's going to play for at least, let's say, 6-7 years under your umbrella and be good because they're a first-round pick just based off the pedigree.
Through the rookie deal, right? Through the expectation.
Well, no, beyond the rookie deal, right, for a first-round pick.
Yeah, but through it.
Yes. 2019, here's an interesting one. Number 24 overall, Josh Jacobs.
Okay.
Now you probably signed up for that, right?
Based on offensive percentage of what he's carrying, yeah.
All right, now, last pick of the first round in 2020 was Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I would say no. Based on what we now know.
If you're redrafting, he's not a first rounder.
2021, number 24, Najee Harris. And number 25, Travis Etienne, right behind him. First round picks, though.
That's the issue. We're not talking about second.
So the chances of you being right on a guy as a running back in the first round that he's going to play 6 to 8 years and be like a good example of this, a good career to base this off of. And I'm trying to remember what round he was picked in. I think it was second round, but I'm going to tell you in a second. If you go back and look at the Eagles, their all-time leading rusher was Shady McCoy, LeSean McCoy.
Right.
He's their all-time leading rusher. He was a second-round pick in the 2009 NFL draft. I think that's what you have to have if you're picking a running back early. somebody who's going to be your all-time, unless you follow someone who's a Hall of Famer, ridiculous. But that's if it's a running back, you need that type of impact. Now, could Ashton Jeanty be that guy? Sure. But I'll say this. They better be sure. They better be sure.
But even then, consider, we fall in love with the outlier, which is what's going on with Saquon Barkley. He's the example because he's exemplary. He's the one of one. Derrick Henry, short, close behind him.
I would say two
but
of two.
But when you consider Saquon Barkley's whole arc, you just mentioned drafted second overall. His team didn't even want him. He goes to another team inside the division, still ends up a free agent because we talk so much about how fungible the running back position is, right? So then we see how he makes the offense go and puts it all together and the Eagles win the Super Bowl handily. You know, we saw the whole arc.
But the infrastructure was in place for Saquon Barkley with the line. Now, and
that line, those two lines, offensive and defensive, were also built through the draft.
So the issue here is that if the Bears were to take Ashton Jeanty, they would have a line in theory that's supreme compared to what they've had in recent years here in Chicago. But the problem is that line not built through the draft. Those are temporary guys. You can go get more permanent offensive and defensive line guys with the first three picks of this draft.
But, and when you consider the crop of running backs and how many people there are who, in this class, they have brought strength to the overall class, whether it's Jeanty, Trevion Henderson, Cam Scataboo. Cam Scataboo, by the way, NFL.com has him third in this draft class out of the running back group.
Who's the other one he's behind?
So it's Henderson out of Ohio State.
Okay, got it.
And then it's Quinshon Judkins, the other Ohio State back. And I think that he's going to be a fabulous pick for somebody. DJ Gittens, RJ Harvey, Amarion Hampton. And Hampton I've seen as high on some people's draft class rankings as second or third.
Okay.
But the point is, there's that much quality. There's more than enough to go around. You could certainly argue a second round pick on someone. I think the Jahmyr Gibbs decision is still so interesting to me because who was behind it? Who said, this is the person I need to run this offense? Enough to where suddenly Swift wasn't needed.
Well, certainly Dan Campbell, Ben Johnson had input.
Right. But was it Ben Johnson who said it, or was it more Dan Campbell's decision? I would want to know because that's going to help us view the next several weeks with the draft.
Maybe you need to get on the horn with somebody from Detroit who can talk about that.
Man, that's the compelling aspect of this. I just don't know that you can say with this team we're gonna spend a first round pick at 10 in the top 10 on a running back when you have one. We will be discussing this more. In fact, I think we should bring it up with Clay Harbor, of course. He's going to be with us at noon of CHSN, the former NFL football player, tight end.
Former also cast member of The Bachelorette.
There's that as well. So Clay will be with us momentarily.
Bears. Mark Grody, covering the Bears for 670 The Score.
Can I get a couple minutes with you here, man?
Man, I need talking today, man. I'm sorry.
Okay.
We'll go next to Mark Grody. Are you from The Score?
Thank you. Hey, Dennis.
Thank you, George.
Go Bears.
Bears. Mark Grody.
Whatever, the Bears suck.
On The Score.
You ain't my bitch.
Okay.
I feel like we had to play Metallica after that because Grody saying Metallica, but he does indeed join us on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, Mark Grody, CircaLasVegas.com. And Groats, Magoats, the reason we wanted to have you on was just because you're you.
I appreciate that, and I am going to start by saying, Layla, this is something that you didn't know, so I'm not mad at you. I don't want people to go after you. I only sing Metallica in the morning. I'm sorry. I know that you were hoping for it. I think Studs probably felt that too, and that's why he didn't play the Metallica music. That is something that I can only guarantee in the morning. But I'm here with you guys. I'm willing to talk Bears, Cubs, Sox, Bulls, Blackhawks, whatever you guys want to get. You got a problem with this,
Brody,
Marshall?
Brody,
you got a problem with my
it's
parameters?
It's 12:01:55 and counting. So you're saying if we had booked you last segment or two segments ago, you'd be fine singing Metallica? Is that what you're saying?
100%. 100%. And, you know, and I honestly, Marshall, I would take requests as well. But the fact that you guys are just violating my AM Metallica only, quite frankly, is a little bit upsetting to me.
You know, whatever you need to get your day started right, Grody, we're here to support you.
No, I'm not. First of all, I used to listen to a radio station where they had mandatory Metallica, and that mandatory Metallica took place at 11. And you know what? They didn't care.
The world wide open.
Yes! See, look.
Wait, did they
you
really?
Can't even obey your own rule.
I know. I am now going. You know what? That's it. I was supposed to work WBBM this afternoon. I was supposed to do a show tonight on the Score. I'm officially out for today. I'll come back tomorrow, but that's it. I'm punishing myself. That's it.
I didn't know you were doing all that. If I'd known that, I probably would have been like, let's get him closer to his time where he has to be.
No. You know what? I'm going to make this very clear to you guys right now, because I hope to be seeing you guys in there a lot. I am happy to come on your show whenever you guys want me to, unless I'm hanging out with Dave Wanstead. Then I can't come on the
That's
show.
That's understandable.
So you're saying
other than that like, you guys are eligible for my VIP plan, which means you can call me. I can be driving around. I will pick up and I will go on your show.
So can't you're get always my girlfriend to do that. Available unless
I'm always doing available
something.
Unless I'm doing something.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
That's right. That's right. So unless I'm doing something with Wani, I am available to you, Layla, and to you, Marshall, anytime.
All right, I appreciate that. So you saw Brad Biggs' mock draft. Have you come out with your? Have I missed your first mock draft yet?
No, I have not come out with my first mock draft.
We're looking
though,
for Grody 1.0. I mean, it's getting late. Yeah. Some people got three mock drafts out. Some people are on 3.0.
All right. You want to know who I would slot in at number 10? I'm doing this right now because I haven't done this officially.
Oh,
yet,
I like
Marshall.
This. I like this. This has not been done on the Take the North podcast?
No, we have not even come close to. Dan and I are pacing ourselves, man. It's been, we've had so much obvious stories on the Take the North podcast that we haven't had time to play around much. And we will, because we will cover the draft like nobody else. But I guess, guys, you ready for this? With the number 10 selection in the 2025 NFL draft, the Bears select tight end Penn State Tyler Warren. And there is a little bit of a history to this for me. I'll tell you what, last year, first round, my first mock draft, I said I had the Bears taking Brock Bowers. And for some of us, this is suggestive stuff. This is what I am leaning towards right now. I think that all of a sudden then you have assuming Tyler Warren is what he has been in college, you have a really good tight ends room, and it actually puts Cole Kmet in a more comfortable spot too in his life, because, you know, he's more of the class of inline Y tight end, and there is an expectation that, you know, Cole Kmet can get, you know, 700 to 1,000 yards, but Tyler Warren probably would be that classic U tight end to complement Cole Kmet and to become a great weapon for Caleb Williams. So there you go, number 10 overall, Tyler Warren to the Bears out of Penn State.
Okay,
wow,
so that's very interesting. I want to let you know your colleague, Brad Biggs, also a contributor here on 670 The Score, he's got Tyler Warren going at 7 to the New York Jets.
Ooh, so he respects the man quite a bit too.
Clearly he does. And I'm just curious, if Tyler Warren's falling that late in your mock draft, which you haven't done yet, but you just went straight to 10, does that mean there's no offensive lineman on the board at that point? Is that why you think they're doing that? Or you think they're targeting Tyler Warren?
This is just my mock draft, Marshall.
I'll roll with it. I'm just...
Yeah. But no, there's some logic to it. And quite frankly, Marshall, this is one of those drafts now where, because of what they have done with Dolman, Tooney, and Jackson, and Zacchaeus, and Odangbo, and Grady Jarrett, and all the guys that they have brought in so far, which has all been good, it opens things up for such conversation to start to talk about Ashton Jeanty, to talk about Tyler Warren. Now, if they do go offensive lineman, that is, I mean, if I had to do an honorable mention for number 10 guys, I would probably go with Kelvin Banks Jr. out of Texas, just because of that. To me, that is realistic, because I do think Will Campbell is out of LSU is going to go top five, probably, maybe New England.
Even with the short arms? Overall.
Even with the short arms, yes. Hey, Peter Skoronski, Northwestern guy, went through all of this and then ended up as a guard mostly. So even if Will Campbell does end up as a guard, I don't think that's a waste. And quite frankly, one of the things that I've thought about with the Bears too is if let's just say they get Kelvin Banks Jr. or somehow, some way, Will Campbell is to fall to the Bears, or if they just take a tackle. Is it out of the question that, because now with what they've done with the interior, you do have much more acceptable to just say, yeah, Braxton Jones looks pretty good at left tackle. Darnell Wright looks great, always has looked good at the right tackle spot. But if you brought in Will Campbell or Kelvin Banks Jr., like, can you turn one of those guys into, would they have the positional versatility to be a guard early on? Either providing depth or even sliding in where Jonah Jackson is. I mean, I know that's like almost conspiracy sort of stuff, but I'm thinking ahead in terms of what the Bears are doing with this offensive lineman, and it's never, never enough. That said, my third in line for honorable mention, Mason Graham, Michigan.
I feel like a lot of people like Mason Graham. I was going to say earlier, it is my impression that the Jets are pretty infatuated with Tyler Warren. I feel like they've even used that word, or in love with him. Like, they seem very focused on trying to get him at 7 overall. You never know if somebody's going to make a trade, but that seems to be the case here. I'm surprised that no draft picks have been traded in the first round up until this point. You know, I think that would have occurred by now,
it's weird, right?
If it were going to. Grody, what do you think of the fact that there haven't even been any pre-draft moves to talk about with picks?
Yeah, do you mean specifically with the Bears, or just anybody playing around with draft order, Layla?
Like, yeah,
just
both.
Any team?
Usually there's transactions.
Right. A lot of these, too. I mean, we know how it goes down on draft night. People save these things up for the actual evening of the draft. I know what you're saying. Like, usually there is a little bit of bouncing around. And we are getting closer, aren't we? So I imagine that some of that is still to come. And most of it probably will happen in the days either leading up to the draft or on actual draft night, which, by the way, will be taking place in Green Bay, Wisconsin this year. And boy, oh boy,
are they excited.
No, I'm not excited necessarily, but I was in Green Bay for that finale game of the season that the Bears won, by the way. Thomas Brown and the Bears. Trivia question. Who was the head coach 20 years from now, guys? You guys will be asking the trivia question. Who was the head coach of the Bears, ready, 20 years from now? The last time the Bears beat the Packers at Lambeau.
The real question is, will Thomas Brown be a head coach in the NFL 20 years
that's
from now?
I love that question. That's a really, let's do this for real. With Thomas Brown, will he be a head coach in the NFL in the next 5 years? We know that he sounds like a head coach, looks like a head coach, plays the part, all the body language is there. Can he successfully run an offense now? That's what we're going to find out. Because we saw, I mean, he was put in, if we're really talking about Thomas Brown, he was put in an impossible position to succeed and had some success, impressed some people. So really, I hope that he walked out of Hallis Hall with more credibility than when he walked into Hallis Hall. For his sake.
I think he will be. Yeah. I think he will be a head coach, right?
Yeah, I think he will be. Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's got it in him. Like I said, obviously it's going to depend on success and what he's able to do. You know, we found out that it's not all about aura. Aura's good. Aura is a must. You know, it's right at the base. But now you just got to be good. And Thomas Brown seems to have it. Let's hope for his sake that it kind of manifests itself.
Well, and the latest news on him was that he was joining Vrabel's staff in New England as a tight ends coach and passing game coordinator. I know there have been several reports and people talking behind the scenes that he very much does want to be a head coach in the league one day. But it sounds like he might have to escape the Panthers and the Bears having such a losing season in order to gain some panache for his resume.
Well, part of the reason...
Go ahead, Marshall.
No, I was just going to say, part of the reason I think he will be a head coach in the next 5 years is he's attached himself now to what looks like it's going to be a winning vehicle. Although in that division, I say that, but it might not be. I don't know.
Right. Hey, things happen fast when you have success as a young coordinator. So if there is fast success, he will quickly get a job. And we all know how it works, and that is how it works. Like, if you're winning, everybody, like, oh, who's the offensive coordinator for this? Who's the defensive coordinator? You know, who's the assistant? Who's the quarterback's coach? Everybody's getting promotions. So it's going to be based on that. I think, too, that Thomas Brown, let's not forget that, you know, Thomas Brown ascended to an incredible, he started off as a background guy with the Chicago Bears, basically, when he came in. Very little contact with Caleb Williams, very little authority with the offense. He goes from that to offensive coordinator to head coach. So his head had to have been spinning, and look, he wasn't even the number one choice over Shane Waldron. So that's where he was developmentally, Thomas Brown. Even if they did hire the wrong guy. So, it, you know, in on paper, he had a long way to go. But we'll see what this Bears bump does for him.
Well, I also think it says a lot about the Bears' decision-making at the time. When the person you trusted with the head coaching job at the end of the season was that far in the background previously. And we had seen reports, you know, Sports Illustrated for the Players Survey, for example, considered him the second most admired when it came to offensive coordinators, and he had to clean up a situation with the Panthers. You know, we forget that history. Players like him, and I really think it speaks more to just how the Bears haven't done a very good job evaluating people.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we all know that the Shane Waldron hire turned out to be a disaster, really one of, and still worth mentioning, because really it's one of the critical mistakes, I don't want to get too dramatic, like in Bears history, but really in the last 10 years, that when you have the number one overall quarterback who is getting attention the way Andrew Luck got attention and all the elite quarterbacks before him that were prospects, and then you bring in the wrong coaching, that is heavy, heavy wrong in terms of how the Bears handled that whole situation. I will say this, though, because I think it's important to look back at Caleb early on in the season. Part of the plan, I think, with Shane Waldron, you know, my understanding is that they thought of Caleb Williams the way we all did, as in, this guy is the truth. He's an NFL quarterback now. He can handle it. So they threw a lot at him, did Shane Waldron. That was the part I liked and understood, and maybe Caleb himself wasn't ready for all that. It was just the way the messages were communicated, the way he was literally coached on the field, the reaction by other players to the way that he was coached, that was the problem. I never had a problem initially with the Bears giving everything to Caleb and treating him like a big boy. It didn't work, but that was the idea. He just was not coached well on the field, especially relative to other players.
So, Grody, we get your thoughts all the time on the Bears, but I know you're deeper than that. You got more than just the Bears up your sleeve. So I want to ask you about the start of baseball season, because it's about to happen. Are you more excited about the Cubs, or are you more scared for the Cubs based on what you've seen so far and what we know about where baseball is and where the Cubs are?
Yeah, I think the Cubs are going to be good this year. And
how good?
Please underline that word, good. I didn't say average. I didn't say great. None of that. Just think about the word good. This Cubs team is equipped to win the division. I don't think that they are as assembled now. They are not assembled to win a playoff game. And or a playoff series, I should say. Anybody could win a playoff game. You know, relative to this division, they're going to win it. I really think that this is where, even though the Brewers keep doing the things that they do, like, we didn't think the Brewers would be what they were last year, but I think really not having Corbin Burns, Willie Adames, Devin Williams, Brandon Woodruff, I think it's going to actually start to catch up with the Brewers this year. So the division, they're all good. I just don't think they're built to win in the postseason right now. I think I, like everybody else, like, I watched both of those games, and it's almost wrong to take them too seriously, because, for instance, like somebody like Justin Steele, I see you smiling. It sounds looks like Marshall might have taken it too seriously.
Oh no, that was the cringe face. But go ahead.
Yeah. You can't take it too seriously when a guy like Justin Steele, guys, wasn't even stretched out all the way in spring training. He wasn't even ready to play baseball yet. And yes, I am making excuses for his poor performance. And Lord knows I've been hard on Justin Steele in the past. So I don't know how you could have had expectations for anybody when you're still in spring training mode.
Well, I think the expectations for the what they're considering ace of the Chicago Cubs should be high, right? If you're trying to build a team and you say you're in it to win it and all that, then theoretically that should be the case. I don't even want to get into what we're seeing out of Houston with the reports on Cam Smith, by the way. How hard was that to read? Now, listen, Mauricio Dubon, by all accounts, seems like a very nice person, and it would be super positive. Like, if I needed him to say something about me, you know, he might do that. He was the one who talked about the 60 home runs. It's not like that was actually the general manager of the team. Either way, it sounds like the Cubs drafted the person they thought that they knew him to be, and then the Astros traded for the person they thought they knew him to be, and maybe he's the one who's exceeding expectations already. Did you see those reports?
Yeah. I mean, yes, I did. And
I covered Mauricio Dubon when he was he's a Sacramento native. When he was the River Cats, but you know what? I if he's as good as people think he is in Houston, the Cubs have a problem, not Houston.
Mark, what do you think?
Well, could this be like the okay? Ready for this? Ready? I got a great analogy for this player. Are you guys ready? Are you guys braced for this? White Sox fans,
we're braced.
You guys are both White Sox fans.
Bolted down.
You ready? You guys ready for this? What if he turns out to be the White Sox version of Fernando Tatis? Like we should not have let that guy go, kind of thing. I don't know if that's going to be the case, but of course you're going to keep on watching. It just tells you guys, you know, it just shows you that for better or for worse, this might be good for some people. The fact that he is not with the Cubs anymore shows that the Cubs are going bleep to the wall to win this year. That they are not. That's why the Matt Shaw thing is weird. He does not fit in right now because he's a developmental guy. If you are in it to win this year, you don't want guys like Matt Shaw having to struggle on the major league roster while this is happening. So that's why, like, to go back to the beginning of the question, I would feel much better if the Cubs had gotten Bregman, like just symbolically, or another starting pitcher. Symbolically, I would have felt a lot better, and literally as the Cubs play.
Hey, Mark, I want to remind people, coming up Thursday, April 17th, we've got a live Take the North podcast from 6 to 7 p.m. on 670 The Score, broadcasting live from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Performance Stage. If you'd like to be a part of the live studio audience for that show, go to 670thescore.com/contest to enter for a chance to win your way in.
And Perry Farrell will be opening for us, too. Perry Farrell of Jane's Addiction will be in the performance studio as well.
So just not...
And, lots of Metallica.
Not Dave Navarro. Yeah. Mark Grody, we thank you for the time. Thanks for joining us.
Great to talk to you guys. Let's talk soon. Bye.
Thank you, Mark. Bears.
Bears.
Bears. Got it.